Gerrs. Hawthorn face their moment now. The long wait to Crawford over. What a team on and off the field that turned out to be.
Hi everyone, welcome to episode 16, our look at some of the great days and great games of the Hawthorn Football Club. My name is Ashley Brown and this week we complete the Daily Double. Fresh off Jason Dunstall talking about his 17 goals against the Tigers, we're joined this week by his full-line partner in crime, the great Dermot Brereton, as we chat about his debut game in 1982 when he kicked 5 goals against North Melbourne in a semi-final at the MCG. And he'll be with us shortly. But first, let me introduce you to my co-hosts. Firstly, as always, Andrew Weiss. Hello, Andrew.
G'day, Ash. Good to be here again.
Good to join you now. Big news here at the Golden Years. We've had to make a compulsory change at selection, and it is out Levine and in Levine. So with Darren unavailable this week, we welcome long-time listener, first-time Golden Years co-host, and no relation, Naomi Levine. Welcome, Gnomes.
Thank you very much, Ashley. Thank you very much, Weesey. Thank you for having me on. I'm very excited to have been the selected Hawthorn supporter to join you this week. And it's great to be here.
Give us your Hawthorn barracking credentials.
Well, I owe my support, my very long-time support for Hawthorn, to my prep teacher, Mrs. Wright. I came from a family of migrants. I myself wasn't born in Australia and we had no real football allegiance. My parents probably didn't even know what shape and Aussie Rules ball was. And my prep teacher, Mrs. Wright, saw an opportunity with our class full of similar kids. None of us really were, you know, born here or bred here, and decided to convert us all to Hawthorn supporters. And by the end of the year, she had a little team of brown and gold preppies marching around the classroom. So I still bump into her at the footy now, and I've seen her at grand final parades. But yeah, she's the reason for my support for Hawthorn.
If Jennifer Wright, and I know Jennifer, if Jennifer Wright could do a tree of Hawthorn membership, it would be in the hundreds, if not.
She should be given an award by Hawthorn, a service award for commitment to that club, because not only has she converted a bunch of supporters, but they all now have their own kids who are all running around in, as my son is, number 6 jumpers for James Sicily and taking speckies over his little sister, all in Hawthorn gear.
Well, I think as a very minimum, today's Dermy pod should be dedicated to Mrs. Wright for her dedicated service to the club. Outstanding.
I'll get her a link to the podcast. She's a beauty, Jennifer. All right, so now, before we continue, the footy is back, of course. Don't forget to visit hawthornfc.com.au and the official Hawthorn app every day for the latest with the footy club. But we're here to turn back the pages of history, and this was one of the most exciting days of the footy for Hawthorn fans, perhaps since the premiership win over North Melbourne 4 years before that. Things were glum in 1982 after a 58-point thrashing from David Parkin's Carlton in the qualifying final. But the Hawks then pulled a stunner at selection ahead of the knockout semi-final against old rivals North Melbourne, selecting 18-year-old Frankston recruit Dermot Brereton for his first senior game. The childhood Collingwood supporter, who idolised Phil Carman, had been part of the Hawks since he was 14, belonging to what was the Eyers squad, that is EYAS, a group of talented youngsters from the Hawks recruiting zone. Eyers, of course, means a young hawk taken from the nest for training. And he made his way through the under-19s and reserves for a couple of years. I actually first saw him play for Victoria in 1981 in the final of the Teal Cup. It was played at Waverley as a curtain raiser to the Collingwood game on the Queen's Birthday Monday in front of 93,000 people. So maybe we should ask Dermot what it was like when he made his debut in front of the second largest crowd he'd ever played in front of. In the reserves qualifying final a week before he was picked for the Hawks, he kicked 2 goals in a win over North Melbourne. So, my fellow Golden Yearers, what are your early thoughts when you learn the backstory of Dermot Brereton?
Well, I think it's interesting because when you think of Dermy as a footballer and you put aside the cars and the motorbikes and the photo shoots and the flamboyance off the field, you've got this picture of a big game, big time, big moment player. So, you know, going back and having a look at the early days of his career, it makes perfect sense that, you know, this kid debuts in the cut and thrust of finals, and not only does he debut, obviously holds his own and kicks 5 goals and really, I guess, just sets the tone for what he's remembered for as a footballer. Just a big game player, always gets the job done.
Yeah, what really struck me looking back at that first game was the confidence. And we know Dermy was a confident player. I mean, confidence is probably an understatement on the way he sort of chose to play. But from that first game, he really just owned the footy field. You know, he played with such maturity and such poise. He wasn't a big guy, but he really just held his own, both sort of physically and also as a player who knew what he was doing and knew what his role was and knew why he was there. So that really struck me as being in him from that first game he played.
Well, we can talk about it for hours, but let's instead talk to him himself as the great man joined us on the line. Welcome to the Golden Years podcast.
Thank you very much.
Great to have you here. We're here to celebrate with the Hawks playing North Melbourne this week. We thought we'd revisit your first game, your magical debut game back in 1982. My first question for you is, you undertook what seemed to be the classic Hawthorn textbook apprenticeship. Did you think you could have played earlier in 1982, or were you surprised you were picked as early as you were?
There was a bit of doubt there for a while. I thought I could have played earlier. There was a bit of a... I came through the Hawthorn under-19s, and the Teal Cup, was aligned... Not aligned with that. Ran correspondingly, and I got through that, and there were several Teal Cup teammates who'd already played for their clubs, like Gary Pert. There was a bloke at South Melbourne then, Mark Witzel, Andrew Bewes, and... even people like Rick Davies, who'd gone back to South Australia by then, he was contacting me saying, if you're not getting a game there, come and play in South Australia. And I was only 17. So I thought I might have got in earlier, but Jeansy was one of those types to – he trusted older players more than a younger player with a lot of talent. So he made it fairly difficult, the path to get in, but it probably served the right way in the end. Yeah.
And so you got a sniff earlier in that week that you were going to get selected for your first game. What was the preparation like for a VFL game back in 1982?
In 82, 38 years ago. You basically just did the same training. You went Monday, Tuesday, you had the light night Wednesday, and then you had what they call a captain's run now or whatever, a Thursday night training. Team was basically selected on Tuesday, but they made out it was selected on Thursday. And I'm sure that sometimes they probably ran right up to the wire and were umming and ahhing about a certain player, but... More by and large, Alan Jeans used to select the teams on Tuesday, but just wouldn't tell anyone. He gave me a lift home and a couple of weeks beforehand, and he said, "You're not far away, son. I just want to let you know, don't get disheartened. You're not far away at all." And I'd been kicking 5, 6, 7 from centre half forward in the seconds weeks in a row, and I thought I was close, but then Jeansy called me on the Thursday night and said, "I think we'll fit you in, son. I think there's a spot for you." And he said he was going to play me on the bench, but he wasn't. That was a bit of a ruse. So he thought that I could, just relax into it. But he started me on the ground. So, yeah, he basically gave me three bits of advice. He said, get your pace up, son. Listen to the coach. It's better to please a fool than tease one. And at some stage, get a haircut, son, and you'll be in the team.
Were you competing with Gary Ablett for a spot on the side?
Nah, Gary. Look, Gary was a different kettle of fish. Gary, I think Gary had sort of just packed up and gone home by then. And having said that, he used to come in and out of the club, and he'd sort of breeze in, breeze out. To be totally honest, Gary was out of the picture by then. I don't know if he was even playing in our reserves. There were things he did in our reserves which were just phenomenal, which, you know, we've seen him do some stuff in at senior level, but in at reserves level, he was just insane what he could do. Yeah, so there was a stage, though, where Gary Ablett was on the half-forward flank in the reserves. Nick Wilton, the Doc, number 21, he was the centre-half forward, and I was the other half-forward flank. So it ended up a pretty good half-forward line. And then after Nick decided to push to other areas of the ground, Peter Curran was the centre-half forward for a little while. So the half-forward line in the, you know, Burton, Curran and Gary Ablett Senior. That was our half forward line by midway through the year. I don't think Gary was in line for it. To tell the truth, the year before when I was 16 and I played my first game of football against men was in the reserves, and I got a call on the Saturday morning that I was being pushed up from the under-19s to the reserves, and that was because Gary went duck shooting. He was picked in the team but just decided to go duck shooting. So, yeah, Gary wasn't all that into his footy back then.
So you knew on the Thursday night you got told that you'd been selected. How long did it take to sink in, and what was it like knowing in the lead-up that you're set to make your debut?
It was fantastic. I was one of those kids who collected footy cards, kicked the footy on the street every week. Every day of the week. Anything I could to do that had anything to do with in the day VFL football, I was into it. I just loved it, and that was my childhood dream to play senior VFL/AFL. Yeah, that was all I ever wanted. So I wasn't nervous. So I was really excited. I couldn't wait for it to come. And then what they used to do in those days was they named five on the interchange bench, and they'd say from, and then they'd bring it down to two. Well, I was named as one of the froms, and I had a look at the team they listed on the paper, and in the paper, after Yabby said we can fit you in, they were short of forward. So I was actually pretty confident that I'd start on the ground, even though Jeansy told me I wouldn't. So I've told him that later in years, and he said, even then you were conceited. So he still found a way to have a go at me.
Dermy, you played with the confidence of a veteran in that first game, let's be honest. Where did that self-belief come from? What did you draw on before that game to go out with such amazing confidence?
As I said, I'd come through the reserves, and about 2 weeks before the end of the year, I think Nick Wilton was back at centre-half forward, and he got injured. And in those days, you played the position, you know, you didn't massage it around all that much. And Des Maher was the reserves coach, and he sent the runner out, and he said, just take a step over into the centre and play centre-half forward. I did, and I think I kicked four in the second half. The next week, I kicked six, I think. The following week was a final, and I think I kicked six or seven against North Melbourne down at the Lakeside Reserve in the qualifying final, the first week of finals against North Melbourne. And I played on a reasonably good player. I think his name was Maguire. He played quite a bit of senior footy, and I'd kicked quite a few on him and played pretty well. So I reckon there's about 4 weeks in a row I was arguably best on ground at centre half forward, and I just felt that, you know, it was going to be harder, it was going to be a lot quicker, a lot tougher, a lot bigger. But I just felt that I had the talent to do it, given that, well, you train with these blokes and you do match practice. And I was playing against blokes who were seasoned senior players, and I was beating them regularly at training. And so I just felt that, look, we're a pretty good team. If I can do that to them, well, I can do that to the opposition as well. It was a little bit daunting when the great David Bench came out and stood next to me for the first mounts. Yeah, he's one of the greatest fullbacks of all time, if not the greatest fullback of all time. So, but when all right, every time that Lee Matthews decided he'd have a rest off the ball, Dench would go and play on him, and then I'd also get Ross Henshaw, who was another premiership player. So had two pretty good players to contend with and did all right. But, yeah, I never felt like I wasn't going to be good enough at the grade. I'd seen, you know, all my teammates and played well against them in inter-club matches, practice matches and the likes.
What's it like to play your first game and know you've got Lee Matthews has got your back?
As my first real shot at goal was, you know, I don't think I touched the ball in the first quarter. Pardon me. I just ran around and not really adjusting to the players up the field, but wasn't too bad. I got to the right spots, but I just wasn't sort of in their vision and I didn't time it all that well. Second quarter, Lee Matthews got a kick out of the middle and I just led up the middle and just put a little veer on the lead and he hit me lace out. And I just thought, geez, that's something I'm going to have to remember. I hope Lee plays up there all day, because if he kicks it like that, I'll be in for a good day. So, yeah, he also shirt-fronted Andy Demetrio that day. And it was just, oh, God, it was just, the sound of it was just awful. But, you know, you've got the best player in the comp. He's arguably the nastiest. He's arguably, his attack on the footy was, I don't think there's ever been anyone better.
And he had an absolute day out, I think, with 37 touches and four goals. But yeah. I guess the second half then must have been a lot more enjoyable, obviously, with the way it panned out, sitting in the forward line. Must have been a bit more relaxing and a bit more enjoyable with the ball coming in there.
Oh, yeah. Once you know you've got the run of the game and you feel like you've got the measure of your opponent, yeah, you can sort of settle into it nicely. So in the first quarter, I remember Ross Glendenning, he got a touch in the back line and I just stood on the mark. Don't know why it was me. He wasn't my opponent. But anyway, I did. And he just ran a little, you know, play on off to a 45 degree. And I just chased him with a junior-minded mindset. And I didn't really dig in to get to him. He sensed that and he put the afterburners on and went again. And I thought, Christ, I'd better chase now. So I dug in, put my head down, and as soon as I did that, a bloke called Kevin Bryant came whizzing through and I just snapped my head back and pulled it out of the way. And he flashed through and grazed the front of my chest from the opposite direction. And he was looking to shirt front me, shepherd shirt front me. And it was almost all over in that first quarter. Had he got me, I'd have been into next week. He'd have definitely broken bones and done something pretty bad. So I was lucky to get away with that. That was a real junior step back for me. But then after that, the real fight out of them in the second half had gone a bit. So, yeah, you could sort of – not that there was ever an easy game of league football, but you could sort of kick back a bit and enjoy the ride, knowing that we were going to kick a pretty good score and you're going to be part of it.
You played in number 47 for that game, and obviously that was not the number that you're best known at and with for your career. How did you come to get that number? It was with Paul Abbott for a year after Don Scott. How did you end up in the 23, Guernsey?
Yeah, that's a pretty good question, Ed. That doesn't get asked all that much. Paul Abbott came down with huge raps, and he was a pretty good player from up in Morwell, over in Morwell, I should say. And the thing is, Hawthorn used to have past players had this little bit of pull where they could say something about who got their new number. And somebody got a number, and if it was their, one of their old numbers, they had a little bit of say in it. So I think there was Pecky and Scotty said they'd prefer me to have it than Paul Abbott. And it was quite a revered number at that stage as well. Eddie Rabbit turned out to be a fantastic player. And he actually said later on to me, he was quite happy to let it go. He said that he felt there was a bit of pressure with some of the past players who'd worn it. And he felt that pressure from them a bit. But I never really noticed it. I'm glad I got the number. It's quite a revered number at Hawthorn. But, yeah, so I was – yeah, it was sort of pushed to me after Eddie's first year. Because he didn't set the world on fire first, but he did later on. He was an exceptional player.
In my recollection, my understanding is, because you listed Frankston, you used to get lifts home from training from Kelvin Moore a lot. What did you learn from all those long drives from Hawthorn, an hour's drive, I suppose, by the time you got home? What did you learn about footy and life sharing a car with Kelvin Moore for a couple of years, for a few years?
Oh, he was fantastic, KD. He, what a great bloke, a champion bloke. We used to call him Skip. He'd get, or the King. He'd get called that by his mates, and everyone around him. No one dislikes Kelvin Moore. Everyone loves him. He's such a good bloke. Mainly that he, I mean, you talk about footy occasionally and the likes, but he, what I got from Kel was, once you jump in your car and you drove off, the footy world was left behind you. You still had the ability to just relax and take life as it comes. Kelvin would have a joke on the way home and laugh and tell stories. And then after about two or three rides up, you know, the radio would go on and we'd end up singing songs out of the radio together. So Kelvin was very good to show me how to switch off and as soon as you left the club. But, yeah, he was fantastic in talking about footy as well. But he had this ability to switch off and leave the real cut and thrust of football behind just for a moment in your life.
One other guy I'd like to get your opinion on, through all the pods we've done with players that we've spoken to through the 80s era, Gary Buchanara, who kicked three on the day, everyone we've spoken to has voluntarily made reference to what an incredible footballer he is at some point in their episode. What are your thoughts on Bucky the footballer and synergies with him in the forward line through those glory years?
Bucky was quite a freakish talent in his own right. You know, we were talking about Gary Ablett a little earlier. Bucky had those traits as well. I mean, this bloke, Gary Buchanara, even today, I think I'm 55. I reckon Bucky would be 58, maybe 3-4 years. He might even be 59. He plays golf, I think, off six still. He played district cricket in West Australia. He was a state squad member as a batsman. You'd pick up a dart, he'd hit the bullseye first time, and then you'd look at him and say, look, this pasty skin, freckled, balding, bifocaled, no muscle definition. If you were walking out for Frankston Bombers seconds and you were playing on the back flank, and you saw that bloke, Gary Buchanara, get out of the car in the car lot and limp to the club rooms with a walk with a limp, take his glasses off, get out on the ground and jog out to the half forward flank with his limp, you'd look at him and start laughing and say, geez, I'm in for a good one today. And then he'd jump on your head. He would just explode. One of the things that blokes, you know, snap around the corner at goals. One of Gary Buchanara's unbelievable attributes was he could snap over, you know, a snap kick a goal over his shoulder from a distance that most blokes would be weighing up whether they had the journey or not. He could snap from 45 metres out and still put it through half post height. He, for a bloke who didn't look that way, he was very powerful in the legs, hence the spring, hence the kick. He was arguably the most accurate kick from a set shot that I've seen. 87 preliminary final will pay testimony to that. He was a beautiful pair of hands. He just about had it all. He's an exquisite talent. And a good bloke too. I just marvelled at what he could do.
When we watched the video of the game, and clearly you're growing in confidence as it goes along, your last goal, the long bomb from 50 metres out on the run, I mean, that is just, in any game, at any stage, that's a great goal. But to kick it in your first game, you must, after, and by that time, the result was well in hand, you must have thought this league footy came with a bit of a breeze after that.
Oh, yes. One game, I had five goals. I thought I only need to play 200 and I'll be the second bloke to reach 1,000. I thought it was going to be that easy. But in reality, even that goal you're talking about, I did notice that when, you know, we'd gone up for a contest and I was the quickest to recover. And I didn't think I was terribly rushed. Yet my opponent and the likes didn't turn that quickly. So I actually thought, that was my fifth goal, I actually thought I'm pretty well settled at this level. I'm feeling comfortable to go on and do better things. That goal actually, as you pointed out, that's what actually did it for me on the day, thinking I can turn quicker than these blokes. I've got more agility than them and they... I don't know if they can stop me. But next week, I came up against a bloke called Bruce Doole and another bloke called Peter McConville, and they certainly stopped me the next week.
You've got to ask about the next week. You hardly got a kick.
The one and only time in my career, Alan Jeans apologised to me. He came up to me... at the end of the year, and I was really dirty because I didn't think I'd done anything wrong. The ball just wasn't getting in to the forward line with any real fluency. And I was only on for a quarter, and Jeansy said, "I'm sorry, son. I just panicked a bit and thought I needed my senior players on the ground." So he took me off, and he admitted he was way too hasty with it rather than giving me a chance to work through the game and work into the game. Because I felt that I could have done all right out there. But, they were a good team, Carlton, and they had our measure.
Through your career, Demi, you were a real big game player and we always saw you really perform when the occasion required it. How do you reckon you'd go playing in front of the empty stadiums we're seeing this season?
Yeah, I'll be injured for the year. I don't think it'd really bother you. You take pride in your performance. I'm that sort of big performance thing and you know, in front of the crowds. I played up to the crowds when I was able to do so. I just love the theatre of major sport. And even at a young age, I just thought, there's got to be something more to coming and watching your footballers play. You've got to have a bad guy. You've got to have a good guy. You've got to have the smug mug. You've got to have somebody in each department. So I played up to it a bit and had a bit of fun with it. But when the whistle blows and it starts, until the whistle blows again and it stops, you switched on, but then you can play up to it a little bit outside of the true playtime.
And so tying it all together, I assume it helps when obviously humiliated by Carlton the next week and the following year, 83, was the start of the run where we played in the 7 grand finals and you're playing in a team for a large chunk of your career that rarely lost, that was line to line full of great footballers, and that probably assisted with that confidence and being able to actually put your character on display.
Yeah, that team was incredible. Yeah, a little known fact from my first game in 82 until I finished at the Hawks. When did I leave? The end of 93. Hawthorn's biggest, longest run of losing games in a row was 2. It's incredible. We never, in 10 years, we never lost 3 games in a row. And to have that sort of consistency was fantastic. As you pointed out, you just know there's great players on every line. There's great players next to you, around you. You mentioned Gary Bucanara before. Like, Gary Bucanara, if he had a bigger tank, if he could have, you know, run... he'd be perfect for, like, this day and age now. But if he could have run out a full game in the middle, he could have been one of the greatest midfielders of all time. He was a brilliant midfielder, but he probably had only 40 minutes in 2 spells in the midfield in him during a game. So that was probably his one weakness, his endurance wasn't fantastic. So you've got players like that. I mean, in the back line, you'd look up the back line and you'd swear you're playing State of Origin football. I mean, the first 4 blokes they'd pick in State of Origin were Collins, Langford, Ayres and Mew. So we had 4 of the starting 6 of the State of Origin in our back line. You'd look behind you and then there's Piggott full forward, and Johnny Platton, who I still think is the best player that I played with during that era. For what he did, he was phenomenal. So there was champion players everywhere. We were very fortunate, and I'd hope that they were looking around thinking the same thing as well.
Dermot, last question. So you've kicked 5 goals on debut. You're 18 years of age. Were you the king of Frankston that night? Did you end up at the 21st Century Dance Club or anything like that?
21st Century Dance Club opened in October 1985. I had to wait another 3 years before I got the gold pass for in there. Where did I go? We went to... I used to hang out with Michael Byrne and Ian Payton, the big mongrel. And we would go out. We went... I think we went into the Underground in Melbourne and we got asked for ID. And the boys were laughing about it because even at that age, when I got asked for ID, I said to the bloke on the door, "Come on, mate, didn't you watch the football today?" what a knob, hey? and the next night, the Sunday night, after Sunday morning training, we went to Nicabella's, which was the usual. Actually, looking back on it, it's probably predictable I didn't play well the next week. I'll tell you one thing, Ash. One thing, Jeansy didn't understand certain areas of the world. He was brilliant. He was like a father to me. But there were certain areas which I've come to learn a lot better than him. After that first game, I was walking off the ground and the cameramen were all sort of hustling around trying to get photos of me. And I sort of stopped and propped a bit to let them. And Jeansy started yelling at me, "Get inside, get inside." And he was telling me off. And he said to me, "I don't want to see one story of you in the paper this week. I don't want to see one photograph. I don't want to see you lining up for anything like that. Just keep it low key, turn up next week and do your job again." Anyway, so I wasn't allowed to, and there were requests coming in from everywhere. I was on my way to work at the AFL and I'd gone to pick up the mail at the GPO, take it into AFL House, and a cameraman jumped out from behind a bush and he said, "I want to get a picture of you on the way to work." And this is like at 8 a.m. in the morning in the city. So I said, I thought Jeansy will tear me apart if I make out that, you know, I posed for this. So I hid behind a tree and he was walking around the other side trying to get a picture of me. And as he walked around one side to get a picture, I just circled the other side, shielding myself. I had to stay there for about 15 minutes before he ran off. That actually unnerved me more. So in fear of Jeans's wrath, that actually unnerved me more than anything else. So as I came to learn later on, what makes one person tick isn't exactly the same for the other. So I was the person that would have been better off. Yeah, get them in, get them done, take the photo, move on. And I wouldn't have felt like I'd done anything wrong, you know. So, yeah, that was a little unnerving in those few days after the game.
Dermot, this has been wonderful for us. We could chat about this for hours, but we've got it going, and so do you. Thank you for joining us on the podcast.
I'm really, really sorry that I can't get the vision and the sound on my phone up here. I'm up on the farm, heading home later today. But, really sorry I couldn't do that. But it's probably a good thing you don't get to see me. I've been out working and digging, so I look like an unmade bed.
That's all right. If we do the second series next year, we'll have to get you on. There's so many more games we can talk to you about. So we've got a long list. So we'll hope to get you back another time. Good luck for the rest of the season.
Thank you very much, mate, and good luck for the Hawks as well up against North Melbourne. Cheers. Yep. See you guys.
Thanks, Dermot.
That was the great Dermot Brereton. Loves a chat. A lot of stories. He left a lot of stories out there, which is why we'll have to get him back another time. So let's have a listen now to some of the highlights from his day out at the first semi-final against North Melbourne in 1982.
Over the top, Polkinghorne tackled by Abernethy. Too high, I thought it was. Hand pass comes out from Ayres on to Payton. Payton downfield. Nicely, Bacanara. Perfect judgment. It was Gary Bacanara makes the difference, 2 points.
Matthews on the shoulder, but he takes it from the centre. A nice pass up towards Brereton. Oh, Brereton right in his chest. Long kick. Is it straight? Looks good. Yes! And Brereton's just driven it a 50-metre goal straight through the centre.
Okay, final score that day, Hawthorn 24-22, 166 defeated North Melbourne, 18-6, 114. Hawthorn's team from the back line was David O'Halloran, Kelvin Moore, Gary Ayres. Half-back line, Rodney Eade, Chris Mew, David Polkinghorne. Centre line, Jeff Ablett, Colin Robertson, Rodney Eade. Half-forwards, Gary Bacanara, Peter Knights, John Kennedy. Forwards, Peter Russo, Lee Matthews, Michael Byrne. Rucks, Ian Payton, Michael Tuck and Richard Loveridge. And the interchange was Dermot Brereton, as you know, he didn't start there, and Alan Goad. Andrew.
And as mentioned before, from a stats point of view, Lethal had 37 touches, 33 to Peter Russo and 29 to Richard Loveridge. 5 goals to Derm, 4 to Matthews and 3 apiece to Bacanara, Michael Byrne and Alan Goad. And surprise, surprise, we're fortunate enough this week to have been on the right end of the umpiring stick. 32 frees to us versus 30 to the Roos. So 62 frees in a finals game of footy.
I just add that Dermy was the highest goal scorer that day with Malcolm Blight, who won the Coleman that year and kicked his 100th goal in that game.
Which was his last game.
It was in the VFL. He went back to the Sandfall after that, though.
Yeah, so that's right. It was his last game. Different in those days. If you kicked 100 goals for the season in the final, people didn't run on the ground. So people sort of knew that it was a final. It's more important we don't run on. So it was a bit sad watching Blight play his last game because he sort of knew he was now outright superstar. So 1982 was a strange year for the Hawks. They had Richmond's measure. They beat Richmond twice comfortably during the home and away season. But they lost 3 out of 4 for the season to Carlton. So and Carlton ended up playing Richmond in the grand final. Hawthorn couldn't get over Carlton in that prelim at Waverley the next week. You know, they all struggled. And Carlton played Richmond in the grand final. But doing a bit of research for this, I came across Alan Jean's video. He did actually after the 83 premiership. I asked him about 82 and he said that they got a few injuries late in the season. He thought they were a live chance to win it. But as was explained, Terry Wallace missed that the finals, and he was a really important member of the side as well. And Moncrief, who was their first choice full forward, he sort of didn't play in the finals either still. So they probably ran out of steam just as the finals started, and that probably was a reason why they didn't win the premiership or have at least make the grand final. Had they gotten over Carlton in that prelim, they probably would have won the premiership. I was at the game. We talked about who was there. I was at the game. I was in the second row of the old Southern Stand in the second level on the half-forward flank at the punt road end. So I had that last guy we talked to Dermy about. Was he kicked that right in front of me, and it was just a great day at the footy. And there was such excitement because we knew that this guy, Brereton, had been brought along, or this kid, Brereton, as he became to know him, the kid. We knew he was going to be an emerging champion of the club, and to be there to watch his first game was really special, and it was very exciting.
Yeah, I just love the game itself is nearly as old as me, and the recollection from Derm, like every exact little story that he's got that turns into a, you know, 5-minute story in itself from one little moment from a game from 38 years ago is just incredible. Could sit and listen to him just reminiscing all day.
I don't think he had the personality to be a coach, but he certainly has the brain to be a coach. His knowledge of football is incredible. His recollection of footy and how it's played, not just the fun stuff, but the serious stuff as well. It's really deep, and it's great to have a chat. And I've been lucky a few times to chat to him over the journey about footy, and it's great to chat to every time.
The minutiae of what he remembers. It's not just the highlights, it's how the ball got to him to create those highlights and how the ball went to the other team as well. It was really amazing to hear. I mean, it's easy to remember your own goals, but to remember how it gets to you is a different story.
And it makes it hard because we're focusing on the one game, but wanting to talk about rep footy, wanting to talk about his relationship with other players, him and the Jason Dunstall combination, his nickname, so much all to talk about. But as you said with him, we'll get him on another time and continue the discussions.
He and Rodney Yeed are the two players. You can sit there and do a name association. You can just throw a name of 40 players from Hawthorn from the time, and either Rocket or Dermot will just give you a story about them and just tell you something about them and stuff you didn't know. Funny stuff and serious stuff about how they played their footy. So we've had them both on the podcast, and for that reason, they'd both be good to get on again at different times. Okay, that has been the podcast for this week. Where do we find your best work on socials, Andrew?
You can find me at WeeC09 on Twitter or via at MySportLive.
No.
You can find me at Honest Truth on Twitter, and don't be aggressive. I'm quite a delicate petal.
Oh, no, go hard. She deals with in her day job, she deals with some absolute alpha people out there. So I urge you to go very hard at her on social media at all times. On Twitter at Hash Brown, Hash with an H, Brown with an E, in the pages of the AFL Record and online at sen.com.au. The Hawks in Review podcast is back, and that's the weekly wrap of how the Hawks are going. It's a very good podcast. They get an assistant coach on after the game to sort of in-depth, to go through the fairly deep analysis of what went right and what went wrong the previous weekend. So we commend that to you through the official Hawthorn app and your usual podcast provider. A shout-out to our friends at the Hawk Talk podcast and also to the Talking Hawks Facebook page who've been said some nice things about us.
Yeah, Maddie, Brad and Chris of Talking Hawks on socials. They're doing some great stuff on Facebook and putting a lot of good content out there as well.
A shout out to Amy and Matt at the Hawks once again for their help in getting this podcast together. So, Andrew, we've got another match committee meeting to come up to decide whether we make this a permanent arrangement. Young Darren has a bit of work to do now to get back on the side.
Yeah, well, maybe we might just have to put it out to the people and let them decide. Might have a upcoming poll on socials and see what, which Levine makes the cut.
As long as there's no evening gown category, I'm happy with that.
No, thank you for coming on and at short notice coming to help us out. I know when we first started this thing and you sent me a note which congratulated me on the podcast, but I think there was a cryptic message like, I'd love to come on. So very glad.
Actually, you're very good at reading between the lines.
It's absolutely a pleasure. Now our first reserve, and there will be times when not one of us is missing, you'll be the first person we call off the bench. So thanks for joining us, and all the best to your Hawk-loving kids, and make sure that they keep the faith and don't cross over to the dark side of Melbourne like your otherwise excellent husband would have them do.
I can guarantee it is my priority that they do not cross over to the dark side. And thank you very much for having me today. It's been a real joy and a pleasure.
Thanks, mate.
Great, thank you. Next week, Hawthorn plays the Giants of GWS. We all remember the snow game last year, and I won't say who it is yet, but we're very confident that one of the players who played in the snow game last year is going to join us to tell us about that wonderful trip to Canberra. You were there, weren't you, Andrew?
I was certainly there for a mate. Took a mate for his 40th for his birthday present. So it was a very, very memorable weekend, memorable evening. So looking forward to discussing that for next week.
That's the plan for next week. Thanks, everyone, for listening to the podcast. Thanks for all the support, all the ratings. Keep them coming through on Apple Podcasts and Spotify and wherever you Google Podcasts, wherever you listen to podcasts. That would be great. In the meantime, enjoy the football against the Kangaroos on Sunday evening, and we will talk to you again next time.
He's on the shoulder, but he takes it from the centre. A nice pass up towards Brereton. Oh, Brereton right in his chest. Long kick. Is it straight? Looks good. Yes! And Brereton just driven it a 50-metre goal straight through the centre.